Chapter 18. Fall of the Foundation. There was an atmosphere about the time vault that just missed definition in several directions at once. It was not one of decay, for it was well lit and well conditioned, with the color scheme of the walls lively and the rows of fixed chairs comfortable and apparently designed for eternal use. It was not even ancient, for 3 centuries had left no obvious mark. There was certainly no effort at the creation of awe or reverence, for the appointments were simple and everyday. Next door to bareness, in fact. Yet after all the negatives were added and the sum disposed of, something was left. And that something centered about the glass cubicle that dominated half the room with its clear emptiness. 4 times in 3 centuries, the living simulacrum of Harry Seldon himself had sat there and spoken. 2 times he had spoken to no audience. Through 3 centuries and 9 generations, the old man who had seen the great days of universal empire projected himself, and still he understood more of the galaxy and his great ultra-great-grandchildren than did those grandchildren themselves. Patiently, that empty cubicle waited. The first to arrive was Mayor Indber III, driving his ceremonial ground car through the hushed and anxious streets. Arriving with him was his own chair, higher than those that belonged there, and wider. It was placed before all the others, and Indber dominated all but the empty glassiness before him. The solemn official at his left bowed a reverent head. "Excellence, arrangements are completed for the widest possible sub-etheric spread for the official announcement by Your Excellence tonight." "Good. Meanwhile, special interplanetary programs concerning the Time Vault are to continue. There will, of course, be no predictions or speculations of any sort on the subject. Does popular reaction continue satisfactory?"
"Excellence, very much so. The vicious rumors prevailing of late have decreased further. Confidence is widespread."
"Good." He gestured the man away and adjusted his elaborate neckpiece to a nicety. It was 20 minutes of noon. A select group of the great props of the mayoralty, the leaders of the great trading organizations, appeared in 1s and 2s with the degree of pomp appropriate to their financial status and place in mayoral favor. Each presented himself to the mayor, received a gracious word or two, took an assigned seat. Somewhere, incongruous among the stilted ceremony of all this, Randu of Haven made his appearance and wormed his way unannounced to the mayor's seat. "Excellence," he muttered and bowed. Indber frowned. "You have not been granted an audience."
"Excellence, I have requested one for a week."
"I regret that the matters of state involved in the appearance of Seldon have—"
"Excellence, I regret them too, but I must ask you to rescind your order that the ships of the independent traders be distributed among the fleets of the Foundation."
Indber had flushed red at the interruption. "This is not the time for discussion."
"Excellence, it is the only time," Randu whispered urgently.
"As representative of the independent trading worlds, I tell you such a move cannot be obeyed. It must be rescinded before Seldon solves our problem for us. Once the emergency is past, it will be too late to conciliate, and our alliance will melt away." Indber stared at Randu coldly. "You realize that I am head of the Foundation Armed Forces. Have I the right to determine military policy, or have I not?"
"Excellence, you have. But some things are inexpedient."
"I recognize no inexpediency. It is dangerous to allow your people separate fleets in this emergency. Divided action plays into the hands of the enemy. We must unite, Ambassador, militarily as well as politically."
Randu felt his throat muscles tighten. He omitted the courtesy of the opening title. "You feel safe now that Seldon will speak, and you move against us. A month ago you were soft and yielding when our ships defeated the mule at Tyrell. I might remind you, sir, that it is the Foundation fleet that has been defeated in open battle 5 times, and that the ships of the independent trading worlds have won your victories for you." Indber frowned dangerously. You are no longer welcome upon Terminus, Ambassador. Your return will be requested this evening. Furthermore, your connection with subversive democratic forces on Terminus will be, and has been, investigated.
Randu replied, When I leave, our ships will go with me. I know nothing of your Democrats. I know only that your Foundation's ships have surrendered to the Mule by the treason of their high officers, not their sailors, democratic or otherwise. I tell you that 20 ships of the Foundation surrendered at Horlagor at the orders of their Rear Admiral when they were unharmed and unbeaten. The Rear Admiral was your own close associate. He presided at the trial of my nephew when he first arrived from Kalgan. It is not the only case we know of, and our ships and men will not be risked under potential traitors. Indber said, You will be placed under guard upon leaving here.
Randu walked away under the silent stares of the contemptuous coterie of the rulers of Terminus. It was 12:10. Beta and Torin had already arrived. They rose in their back seats and beckoned to Randu as he passed. Randu smiled gently. You are here after all. How did you work it?
Magnifico was our politician, grinned Torin. Indber insists upon his visisonar composition based on the time vault, with himself, no doubt, as hero. Magnifico refused to attend without us, and there was no arguing him out of it. Ebling Meese is with us, or was. He's wandering about somewhere. Then, with a sudden access of anxious gravity, Why, what's wrong, Uncle? You don't look well.
Randu nodded. I suppose not. We're in for bad times, Torin. When the Mule is disposed of, our turn will come, I'm afraid.
A straight, solemn figure in white approached and greeted them with a stiff bow. Beta's dark eyes smiled as she held out her hand. Captain Pritcher, are you on space duty, then? The captain took the hand and bowed lower.
Nothing like it. Dr. Meese, I understand, has been instrumental in bringing me here, but it's only temporary. Back to Home Guard tomorrow. What time is it?
It was 12:03. Magnifico was the picture of misery and heart-sick depression, his body curled up in his eternal effort at self-effacement. His long nose was pinched at the nostrils, and his large, down-slanted eyes darted uneasily about. He clutched at Beta's hand, and when she bent down, he whispered, Do you suppose, my lady, that all these great ones were in the audience? Perhaps when I played the visisonar?
Everyone, I'm sure, Beta assured him, and shook him gently.
And I'm sure they all think you're the most wonderful player in the galaxy, and that your concert was the greatest ever seen. So you just straighten yourself and sit correctly. We must have dignity.
He smiled feebly at her mock frown and unfolded his long-boned limbs slowly.
It was noon, and the glass cubicle was no longer empty. It was doubtful that anyone had witnessed the appearance. It was a clean break. One moment not there, and the next moment there. In the cubicle was a figure in a wheelchair, old and shrunken, from whose wrinkled face bright eyes shone, and whose voice, as it turned out, was the livest thing about him. A book lay face downward in his lap, and the voice came softly. I am Harry Selden. He spoke through a silence, thunderous in its intensity. I am Harry Selden. I do not know if anyone is here at all by mere sense perception, but that is unimportant. I have few fears as yet of a breakdown in the plan. For the first 3 centuries, the percentage probability of non-deviation is 94.2. He paused to smile, and then said genially, By the way, if any of you are standing, you may sit. If any would like to smoke, please do.
I am not here in the flesh. I require no ceremony. Let us take up the problem of the moment, then. For the first time, the foundation has been faced, or perhaps is in the last stages of facing, civil war. Till now, the attacks from without have been adequately beaten off, and inevitably so, according to the strict laws of psychohistory. The attack at present is that of a too undisciplined outer group of the foundation against the too authoritarian central government. The procedure was necessary, the result obvious. The dignity of the high-born audience was beginning to break. Inber was half out of his chair. Beta leaned forward with troubled eyes. What was the great Selden talking about? She had missed a few of the words. That the compromise worked out is necessary in two respects. The revolt of the independent traders introduces an element of new uncertainty in a government perhaps grown overconfident. The element of striving is restored. Although beaten, a healthy increase of democracy. There were raised voices now. Whispers had ascended the scale of loudness, and the edge of panic was in them. Beta said in Torin's ear, "Why doesn't he talk about the mule? The traitors never revolted." Torin shrugged his shoulders. The seated figure spoke cheerfully across and through the increasing disorganization. A new and firmer coalition government was the necessary and beneficial outcome of the logical civil war forced upon the Foundation. And now only the remnants of the old empire stand in the way of further expansion. And in them, for the next few years at any rate, is no problem. Of course, I cannot reveal the nature of the next prob— In the complete uproar, Selden's lips moved soundlessly. Ebling Meese was next to Randu, face ruddy. He was shouting, "Selden is off his rocker! He's got the wrong crisis! Were your traitors ever planning civil war?" Randu said thinly, "We planned one, yes. We called it off in the face of the mule." "Then the mule is an added feature, unprepared for in Selden's psychohistory. Now what's happened?" In sudden, frozen silence, Beta found the cubicle once again empty. The nuclear glow of the walls was dead, the soft current of conditioned air absent. Somewhere the sound of a shrill siren was rising and falling in the scale, and Randu formed the words with his lips, "Space raid!" And Ebling Meese held his wristwatch to his ears and shouted suddenly, "Stopped by the galaxy! Is there a watch in the room that is going?" His voice was a roar. 20 wrists went to 20 ears, and in far less than 20 seconds it was quite certain that none were. "Then," said Meese, with a grim and horrible finality, "something has stopped all nuclear power in the time vault, and the mule is attacking." Inber's wail rose high above the noise. "Take your seats! The mule is 50 parsecs distant." "He was," shouted back Meese, "a week ago. Right now, Terminus is being bombarded." Beta felt a deep depression settle softly upon her. She felt its folds tighten close and thick until her breath forced its way only with pain past her tightened throat. The outer noise of a gathering crowd was evident. The doors were thrown open and a harried figure entered and spoke rapidly to Inber, who had rushed to him. "Excellence," he whispered, "not a vehicle is running in the city. Not a communication line to the outside is open. The 10th Fleet is reported defeated and the mule's ships are outside the atmosphere. The general staff—" Inber crumpled and was a collapsed figure of impotence upon the floor. In all that hall, not a voice was raised now. Even the growing crowd without was fearful but silent, and the horror of cold panic hovered dangerously. Inber was raised. Wine was held to his lips. His lips moved before his eyes opened, and the word they formed was, "Surrender." Beta found herself near to crying. not for sorrow or humiliation, but simply and plainly out of a vast, frightened despair. Ebling Meese plucked at her sleeve.
Come, young lady.
She was pulled out of her chair, bodily.
We are leaving, he said, and take your musician with you.
The plump scientist's lips were trembling and colorless.
Magnifico, said Beta, faintly.
The clown shrank in horror. His eyes were glassy.
The mule, he shrieked. The mule is coming for me.
He thrashed wildly at her touch. Torin leaned over and brought his fist up sharply. Magnifico slumped into unconsciousness, and Torin carried him out potato sack fashion. The next day, the ugly, battle-black ships of the Mule poured down upon the landing fields of the planet Terminus. The attacking general sped down the empty main street of Terminus City in a foreign-made ground car that ran where a whole city of atomic cars still stood useless. The proclamation of occupation was made 24 hours to the minute after Selden had appeared before the former mighty of the Foundation. Of all the Foundation planets, only the independent traders still stood, and against them the power of the Mule, conqueror of the Foundation, now turned itself.